people will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa, for reasons they can't even fathom. They turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door, as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. For it is money they have, and peace they like.
Ray, just sign the papers.
And they'll walk out to the bleachers. Sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon. They'll find they have reserved seats somewhere along one of the baselines.
Oh, they'll come, Ray. 12 after 10 on WGN. This is Sean Williams, and we start with that today because there's three interesting things on the calendar to meet today and tomorrow, and that's just one of them. So welcome to the show. John's here in the Allstate Skyline studio with producer Griffin Filipich. Joe, speaking of baseball, is on the road doing just that. Joe, good to have you in the house.
Glad to be here, John.
Even if it's digitally, and Don Kleppen is here as well.
Hello.
So let me just, I was just looking at the calendar. Today is pot day.
Yes, sir.
420. Griff said, why is it, I don't know why they, that's the ha-ha day for marijuana smokers, but I said, well, that's because that's the penal code for arresting somebody with marijuana, 420.
One out of 12, we got a 420.
And Griff said, that's not true. Did you look that up?
I did, yeah. I mean, but it doesn't pass the smell test. It's too convenient.
Get it? Also, smell test?
good God.
Oh, man, you're so funny.
All right, well, we're done with this. What else is going on?
So Griff's...
did not enjoy that. Did not. But no,
really? You didn't like my stoner impersonation?
Well, it clearly comes from a lifetime of experience, but no.
It does.
I didn't love it. But it seemed too convenient for that to be the explanation. And you look it up and they say, well, it might come from somewhere in California around like 50 years ago. Maybe that was, but there's no confirmation.
Yeah, I always thought there was a certain time when kids would get off of school and then go
420 and then they go smoke some reefer.
Yeah, that's what I've read too.
Yeah. Today is Hitler's birthday. There's no possible segue between those things. It's also Holy Saturday, and the Sox are at Detroit. Then you've got tomorrow, Sunday, which is Earth Day. In fact, it's the 49th anniversary. Next year will be a big one for the planet and those of us who care about it. Tomorrow's the 30-year anniversary of Field of Dreams, Ray. And it's Easter Sunday. The Bulls are idle. So it's pretty funny to me that, you know, this is what you do. If you say, okay, Field of Dreams, 30-year anniversary, I know, let's put out a column that says what a terrible movie that is. So the Tribune has a sports column today about what a terrible movie Field of Dreams is, and I take offense to that.
That's trolling, man. That's
totally
trolling.
That is totally what that is. That is so easy.
I take offense to both sides of this equation.
I don't think you can do that.
Absolutely you can. That it was published is annoying.
Yeah.
And being defensive about it, not equally, I just can't imagine being defensive about it.
Well, I guess that movie didn't resonate with you the way it did me.
I'm a fan of the film. Yeah. But you have to know that there are many, many people like you that feel the same as you. And just take comfort in that it's a truly beloved movie. And one guy thinks he's smarter and better than it. And or it's actually a pretty vocal.
There's more than one person that feels this way?
Yeah, by now it's like...
isn't new.
Almost as common a refrain as, the last 20 minutes makes me cry every time, is that movie is overrated. Because that's just what happens. But we don't have to play these roles. It's good. That's where I come down, you know? It's a very predictable discourse.
Okay, but I just want to read a line from this piece in the Trib.
Yeah.
He says it's just another terrible film. That's all. That's what you got here, folks. And I mean, that's a disservice to terrible films out there. I mean, that's almost a genre unto itself, and God bless them, but this is not the same thing as that. It's not just another terrible film. If anything, it's an exceptional terrible film. But anyway, this is nothing more, he writes, than epic helping of an epic helping. I think he means, well, maybe he means helping. I'll read it the way he wrote it. This is nothing more than an epic helping of corniness, passed off as some ethereal fantasy that gets to the deeper meaning of life.
Now, here's the thing. That's a perfect distillation. It is an epic helping of corniness. I think there's no denying that.
But, passed off as some ethereal fantasy.
But I think it is an ethereal fantasy, and it's corny. Right?
And it gets to the deeper meaning of life.
I think it does. It's not being passed off as that. It is that. It can be both. It can be both.
I'm glad you said that, Griff, because we sort of defer to you on movies around here, and I thought, what's so bad about that? He writes that as though that's a criticism, and I think I'm okay with a somewhat corn. I know that they can't walk out of a cornfield, for God's sakes, and that his wife would have left him a long time ago.
It's literally.
What are you talking about? I can pop my tickets, man. What the heck?
Well, you still can.
You paid your $20.
That's right. Exactly.
That's the funny thing is I went there last year, and it's free. You can just stroll right up.
Yay.
Really?
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah, that's great.
How can you not take joy in that speech with a performer like James Earl Jones just diving in without any hesitation to the most ridiculous speech? I love it.
That's what I love about every character in that movie. They all own it. None of them are looking going, right? I mean, right? No, they're all like, they are completely in the moment on those scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a pretty solid cast, too. I know he kind of poo-poos that.
We were just talking about the bad guys, Timothy Busfield, who's in my favorite sports or baseball movie ever, Little Big League. Have to get in a quick
plug. He's 30-something to me, but keep going.
He's 30-something. He was in the West Wing, and he's the bad guy in Field of Dreams. I love him. You get James Earl Jones, Kevin Costner, I don't know, others.
Well, who played Ray Liotta?
Ray Liotta.
This is why I think the tell on this is that in this piece, you can read it in the Tribune online, there's a print edition too, but he says Ray Liotta as Shoeless Joe Jackson is ridiculous. I'm like, I don't know, really, does anybody know what Shoeless Joe Jackson is supposed to be like?
Oh, and I love that performance, too.
I thought, whatever that was, I thought that was fun, it was great.
I don't know when Ray Liotta is ever like reserved and not ridiculous either. He's basically flying off in those smoking commercials,
the Chantix commercials.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
That's just truly his greatest performance. But but I mentioned to you before the show that Ray Liotta read the script and thought it was ridiculous and stupid, and he did the movie anyway because he likes to work.
Yeah,
but. You know.
Didn't he call it an epic helping of corniness passed off as some ethereal fantasy?
Well, and then he said it was passed off as some ethereal fantasy that gets to the deeper meaning of life, which is nothing more, he continues, than a chance to play one more game of catch with your athletically challenged dad. Griff, I want to go to that scene. Just so here, everybody has the scene that makes them cry, right? Is it when he crosses the foul line and then you realize he can't go back? Or is it when, I don't know, you could pick your moment that made you cry. This is what kind of broke me up. Hit it, Griff.
Hey, Dad? You want to have a catch?
Gentlemen, discuss.
Want to have a catch?
I have trouble with the wording of that.
Well, and we broke it down, I feel like,
we did this a year or two ago.
Like, is that a regional phrase or what? And no good answers, but...
Well, the correct answer is that's the only line they botched and it still works.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't take you out of that moment. The music is still kind of keeping you there, and it's like, you know, you're invested in it, but yeah, that definitely sticks out.
I've never been a fan of the phrase, want to have a catch. I've always thought it should just be, want to play catch,
right?
Would you
right.
like to have
it's just so simple.
That's how it goes.
Maybe that's why they never played. It's because he kept asking him if you want to have a catch.
He was like, oh, what does that mean?
Right. 20 years.
Ruby?
That's it.
So, 30-year anniversary of Field of Dreams, not too far away in Iowa. You guys, both of you made the trip, or just Joe?
Just Joe.
Joe made the trip. Is it worth 20?
He
took a pass.
Sorry. I was like, yeah, my dreams are right up here.
And by the way, this time last week, we talked about that Naperville guy, James Holzhauer, who's won 12 consecutive days now. He's at $851,000.
Man.
It's amazing to me because you think that's got to be the best of all time, except maybe that Ken Jennings guy. He is not even yet a third. He's about one. He's actually at 25%. Of Ken Jennings' earnings. Jennings was $3.2 million. He's at $850,000. And Jennings is second place all time. This Brad Rutler guy, I don't remember him like I do Jennings, but Rutler is at $4.7 million. This is one thing that I'm thinking about. when I think about these super smart guys that do so well on Jeopardy, I think with a mind like that, what could you do? If you're so smart and so quick and so cool under the gun, what could you do with that? You know, should you be a doctor? Should you, I don't know, just fiddle around and be a scientist? Should you, and this is what happens to a lot of great minds in America today, be a craft brewer? As it turns out, he's found a way to parlay that cool, calm wit of his. He's a sports gambler. That's kind of weird. I mean, I almost think that you should do something to, I don't know, better America or the world. If you can be that smart and you're on Jeopardy, the fact that you know the Packers by three is good money, you should aspire for more than that. You know what I mean? At least that's my take on it. It's 10:22. What did you just whisper into my ear? We have an announcement about the White Sox game. Is that correct, Liz?
It is canceled, and it will be made up on August 6th.
Okay.
Due to rain in Detroit.
So we're on till 12 noon then, huh?
Yes, sir. That's what it seems like.
We can't get Ed and DJ to do a little pregame for us. Andy Mazur could come down and chat this thing up. I've only got 90 minutes of gas in this tank today. We'll have to go all the way until 12 noon. It's 10:26. By the way, if you go to WGNradio.com/Jefferson, that's where you'll find video and information about how to buy tickets to see our Thomas Jefferson conversation Saturday, May 18th. Saturday, May 18th at 10 a.m. at the Classic Cinemas Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. We're going to do some different things on stage with TJ this time. But inevitably, when we talk about TJ, one thing comes up. I don't know if it'll come up this time. If somebody asks a question, he'll have to address it. This is from the show. I'm not sure if it was last year or the year before, but here's just a sample of what you'll hear and see if you come to our Thomas Jefferson show on May 18th.
I believe there will be one revolution after the next, until everyone is treated identically in the law and everyone has a roughly equal opportunity at economic prosperity. But if you're saying, and I think I hear you saying, that women should vote, I'm against that. I think it's self-evident. And I hope you will agree with me that the tender breasts of ladies were not formed for political convulsion.
Just keeps getting better, doesn't it?
Much better that you smooth the feathers of your husbands returning ruffled from political debate. I said our American angels mistake themselves much if they wish to pursue the French Amazons into the public arena. No, ladies, your happiness, if you only know to recognize it, resides in the nursery. Oh. I sense agreement. This is how we saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
Abigail Adams wrote that famous letter to her husband. You know that letter? So we're about to declare independence, and John Adams is the key figure by far. And we're at the Second Continental Congress, and she's back at Braintree, and so he's in Philadelphia. And so she writes him this letter and says, I long to hear that you have declared an independency. And when you do, I hope that you will remember the ladies. And she says, do not be tyrants. All men would be tyrants if they could. But if you don't attend to the rights of women, we ladies are determined to foment our own rebellion.
So you saw the incongruity.
Thomas Jefferson on stage with us, and we go on and on from there based on a question somebody had asked. Tickets for... maybe people are going to turn in their tickets now. But here's the thing. Tickets at WGNradio.com/Jefferson. As much as the theme of the show this year is going to be Jefferson comes back after 200 years, we have an unrehearsed conversation on stage with this Rhodes Scholar, by the way. And then you get to ask questions, too. And the theme is, well, he's a little disappointed in what's become of America 200 years later. But I think I'm going to turn it on him a little bit this year and say, you know, we're a little kind of disappointed in who you guys are. We have this ideal of all men are created equal in Jefferson and the founding fathers, and weren't they great? When you boil it down, they said, felt, and did some things that you and I would found unconscionable. And that's little and small things. We'll have a fun conversation with Thomas Jefferson. Please do come. I'm not going to be here next Saturday. I'll be on the road, so I won't be here to remind slash bug you that this is in your best entertainment interest to go to WGNradio.com/Jefferson. Okay, news coming up next after this. Thank you, Don. It's 10:39. Shout out to my friend Gary, who's traveling from Minnesota through Illinois today. Hey, Gary, thanks for tuning us in, and thanks for tuning us in wherever you are, too. So the White Sox, we're going to talk to Steve Bertrand in a second, but Andy Mazur just popped in from WGN Radio Sports. Of course, part of our White Sox team here at WGN doing a pre, post,
and whatever they need,
and some sweeping play by floors, play as well.
Yeah, you got it,
but not today, huh?
No, today is it's the three worst words for a sports fan: no baseball today. A little rain in Detroit. It started coming in late in the game yesterday, and I think we're kind of thankful that we didn't have to sit around and wait and have this canceled later in the afternoon.
So a doubleheader now, which baseball hates as well.
Yeah, day-night doubleheader in Detroit, August 6th. This is the good thing about the way that this schedule in particular, because a Central Division team, you're going to go back to that city, whereas when Tampa Bay was in town or when Seattle was in town, if there was rain then, they'd wait forever just because those teams don't come back. So it's hard to schedule.
Yeah. You were telling me off the air, speaking of the schedule,
yeah,
because I was just saying it's... I guess it can rain in June, July, and August.
Yeah, too, anywhere.
But it just seems to me like we've already had a number of rainouts or snowouts or something outs.
Mm-hmm.
And now baseball, which doesn't like doubleheaders, is having to either play on off days or play double bills.
Yeah, and those off days sometimes get complicated because the Players Association has to sign off on anything more than 20 consecutive days without a day off. So they can't agree mutually if they have a mutual off day. Say it's the 22nd day or the 21st day. The Players Association has to sign off on that.
They need to have fewer games, Andy.
Well, that's the big solution, I think. But again, you're going to get pushback from the owners because obviously they want more gate, they want more opportunities to have fans come in. And a lot of people scream and shout, say, "Well, why don't we start the seasons on the West Coast? Why don't we start the seasons in domes?" The only problem with that is the West Coast teams and the dome teams will be playing a bulk of their home games early in the season. And if they're in the race, they're not going to get any home games at the end.
Okay, but they also... you understand what I'm about to say.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
That they'll also get a good head start.
Yes, they would. They would get a good start to the season.
That's the schedule. Yeah. This is America. Win your damn games.
Yeah, they would get a good start to the season. And, they would be ahead of the game, so to speak. But again, it's a long year. It's 162 games. So even if you start well, like the Mariners got off to a great start, they're coming back to the pack a little bit. The Brewers got off to a great start. They're coming back to the pack a little bit.
Cubs are doing the flip of that.
Cubs are doing the flip of that right now. The White Sox are doing a little bit of winning, a little bit of losing, just kind of alternating days. And so it's a complicated process because it was used to be done by a couple. They would sit there and they would literally make the schedule.
A man and a woman.
A man and a woman would do the schedule.
Major
League Baseball schedule. For years they did this, and then with the advent of interleague play, a computer took over.
But until then,
it was a man and a woman,
Bob and Karen, and
Bob
they were,
and, yeah, Karen. They were just sitting there and poring over things and trying to figure out what days stadium.
If that was me
used.
And Brenda, one of two things would happen:
we'd have no season, or we'd start in July.
I'd forget a page, So the Padres would be there going, "Wait, we don't have any games this week," and I'd go, "Oh, we found it!
We don't have a game for a month. What's
going
on?
Sorry, Pods." Or I would just like the Cubs would have 214 games,
and they're all at home. Everyone was at home.
And then somebody else would have 19 games, and they'd have a series in the Philippines. And I go, "Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. My bad.
Wait, we said vanilla, not Manila. Come on."
It was very, very complicated. Okay. No White Sox baseball today. They'll play Monday.
They're playing tomorrow. We'll have another game tomorrow.
Sunday.
Same time, 11:35, pregame, 12:10, first pitch.
Thank you, Andy Mazur.
You got it.
That's Andy Mazur. You hear him before, during, and after White Sox baseball. You're on WGN. Steve Bertrand, who does news and the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, is also on the phone. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Scott Williams. I'm great. How are you?
Good. I am not going to be here next Saturday, as Brenda and I next Friday will leave for London. We'll spend 3 nights there. We'll take a first-class train then to Edinburgh, Scotland, and we'll spend 3 nights in Scotland with about 30 or 40 WGN listeners. We're much looking forward to that.
It's going to be a great trip. There's a great crowd going with you. A lot of moving pieces on this one. So hopefully everything goes well. It's going to be in charge of you. You're going to be in charge to make sure there are no mess-ups in Britain. Can you handle that for me?
You just heard what I said to Andy about the Major League Baseball schedule, right?
Right.
Yeah. Steve Bertrand Travel. Steve at this radio station, who you know as one of our main players on the radio, also runs the travel for us. He organizes these trips. So there's a Lou Manfredini trip. There's a are Kathy and Judy doing a trip with you?
No, they're doing a trip, I think, a cruise, but it's not with me.
Okay, so is Lou doing a trip with you?
Not this year, maybe next year.
Who's doing a trip with you from the radio station?
I'm doing three this year. You're doing one. Dave Bennett's doing one.
Dave Bennett's got one.
And Steve Cochran's got one coming up that we're selling now.
Where? Really? Where'd you get Cochran to go?
He's going to host the trip to Prague for the Blackhawks game.
Now that does make sense.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the... I didn't know Cochran was going on the Prague trip.
Oh, yeah, he's on board.
I heard you guys talk about it briefly the other day. I missed the part where he must have said, yeah, and I'm hosting. But it's the Blackhawks, Steve Cochran, and Prague, which Brenda and I have been to. And it's just, any of those are fun reasons to go. What a great lineup. But, I mean, this just kind of popped on me the other day on the radio. What happened here?
It popped on me. I was in Mexico when they released the schedule, and I started getting emails from people who travel with us saying, can you put together a trip to Prague for the Blackhawks opener against the Flyers? And, you know, the tickets sold out in like 15, 20 minutes or something like that. But luckily I partnered with the Blackhawks. They got us some VIP tickets, and we put together a trip real quick. It's a short window because the tickets are so hot. The hotel, there's such demand for hotels that we kind of have to have our number by about a week from now. So it's kind of a short window to turn it around. But, yeah, you're going to go. It's a five-day trip. Spend it all in Prague. You'll do some touring of Prague. But the big thing is VIP passes to the Blackhawks opener against the Flyers.
Some of the buildings there, some of the courtyards in the town squares.
Beautiful.
The narrow streets, sometimes you kind of go up, sometimes you go down. The shops are just fascinating and beautiful and interesting things inside.
It's an old world city, but you know what I like, John, is you could go to Wenceslas Square, which is the more modern part, the main broad boulevard, and you can find, it's not easily found, but you can find the balcony that Václav Havel stood on during the Velvet Revolution when they overthrew the communists in the late 80s.
Huh.
It's a great historical town for all of that stuff.
Yeah. And then the Blackhawks open up next season. A lot of, you know, Major League Baseball does this, the NBA, the NFL, they all will do these feature games in other countries to push the brand out. It makes sense that hockey would go to Europe. So there is the NHL. Is that then the league opener? It's, I guess, the Blackhawks opener anyway, huh?
I would think it's the Blackhawks opener, yeah. I mean, I would think it's the league opener, sure. I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, okay.
But,
and that's going to be in Prague. What's the date on that, Steve?
The trip leaves October 2nd, and the cost is $3,500, essentially. It includes airfare, the tickets to the game, obviously, tickets to all of the sites, and a dinner or two as well. And the Blackhawks sent it out to their season ticket holders or their ticket buyers yesterday. So I got to tell you, my phone and email has been ringing off the hook. We're going to probably sell out on this one pretty quickly, but there's still about 15 spots left. And I'd love for people to join up.
Okay. So if you're a Blackhawks fan, a WGN and Steve Cochran fan, a person who's always thought, boy, I'd love to go to that part of the world. And I can just, again, say that Brenda and I spent a night or two there as part of a tour we were taking down the Danube. And it was just really special. So here's your chance. Go to SteveBertrandTravel.com. Is that what you want us to do?
Yeah, you can do that. You can go, you can just send me an email, steve@stevebertrandtravel.com, or call me. My number is 847-606-6065. If you want to go, I hate sounding like a used car salesman, but it wouldn't be a bad idea to just fill out the reservation form, email it to me today, or scan a picture of it, send it to me that way to reserve your spot. You know, I'm in that spot, John, where I've got about 15 spots left, and I've heard from lots of people who I think are going to go, but their reservations just aren't in yet, so there's still time to squeeze in a spot.
Tell them the easy way to remember that phone number, Steve.
this is your, you do this, I don't do that. I just say 847-606-6065.
No.
Now, what's your gimmick?
It's like a cheer. So, you know the 847 area code, 847, you can remember that, but then, and 606 sounds Chicago, doesn't it? So then you say 606-6065. I think that would be an easier way to remember that.
Do you think that's how people are going to remember the number?
Or email Steve at stevebertrandtravel.com.
Yeah.
Okay, buddy. Good to hear your voice.
Listen, you gotta, I can solve the baseball problem. You reduce the number of games, and you just jack up the ticket prices, because they do that all the time anyway.
That's the thing. I thought, okay, you know, my idea is fans don't want to go to windy, rainy, cold, snowy games, and you get that at either end, potentially, of the season. And since they will not put teams in warm cities or dome stadiums to start the season, then this is just the way it's going to be. So the only resolution is fewer games. And my idea is that accommodates the fans. I suspect there are people listening to us right now, though, that would say, nah, I'd like 200 baseball games. I'm a big Cubs or White Sox fan. I love baseball. I don't want fewer games. But I think that it would be better for the players. And I think I don't think if you had 150 games, I don't think you would miss the 12 that much, especially.
They count every penny they squeeze out of us.
You're talking about the owners now. I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not.
Oh. Well, listen, I know that the Blackhawks Flyers will not be rained out in Prague.
I'm hanging up on you now, Steve.
All right, I'll listen to the rest of the show.
That's a Steve Bertrand, Steve at stevebertrandtravel.com or 847-606-6065 for that Blackhawks trip. How about that? One quick note, too, just since we're talking travel here, and that is while I'm leaving on a Bertrand trip Friday, you know, another one of our sponsors, Kelly Cruises, has organized trips with, and I apologize to Steve, but I don't think he minds that much. Kathy and Judy are doing a Kelly Cruises cruise, and also Lou Manfredini is doing a Kelly cruise to Alaska. All of that is at kellycruises.com. Kellycruises.com, they're in Oak Brook. And Brendan and I have been traveling with them for 10 years. We are going to Paris and then to Normandy at the very end of July and for the first week of August. This is the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And it's just, I think it's really going to be spectacular, both on the Paris end, Paris, so many great sights to see, and then Normandy is really going to be powerful. We'll spend 2 days in Normandy on a riverboat. We'll go up and down on one of those great luxury river cruises. I suppose what happened at Notre Dame won't be a deterrent for people to go, but will be a somber part of our trip as well. You'll surely get a chance to get as close as you can to that and reflect on that. It's a shame that we won't be able to go inside, but I think people will still be interested in seeing what's become of that this summer, as well as the Eiffel Tower and all those other things to see and do. KellyCruises.com to travel with us this summer to France. It's 10:52.
Yeah, man, you didn't know that? This country is founded. It was founded by people who were into aliens, man. George Washington, man, he was in a cult. And the cult was in the aliens, man. You didn't know that? Oh, man, they were way into that type of stuff, man.
George Toad Weed.
Absolutely, George Toad Weed. Are you kidding me, man? He grew fields of that stuff, man. That's what I'm talking about. Fields, not burning, man. He grew it all over the country, man. He had people growing it all over the country, you know? The whole country back then was getting hot, let me tell you, man, because he knew. He was onto something, man. He knew that it would be a good cash crop for the southern states, man. And so he grew fields of it, man. But you know what? Behind every good man, there's a woman. And that woman was Martha Washington, man. And every day George would come home, she'd have a big fat bowl waiting for him, man, when he'd come in the door, man. She was a hip lady.
I'll have to run that by Thomas Jefferson and ask him if Martha was a hip lady.
That's from Dazed and Confused.
No kidding. Was it, Griffin? I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
That's Dazed and Confused, our mini salute to April 20th. Happy Marijuana Day.
It makes you think.
Well, I have not. You know, I've said this because it's true, Griffin. I've never so much as inhaled I have never taken, but I suspect that's what it's like. You think you're onto something. Your mind's kind of firing in creative places. But it's kind of not so smart at all.
Is that straight from the Bill Clinton admittance of what he had inhaled or not inhaled?
Yeah, what was his line? He did...
He tried it, but he didn't inhale it, correct?
He did not inhale.
I did not inhale, yeah. And then some people said I inhaled but didn't like. And then some people are all in. I just wonder that when marijuana becomes legal recreationally, if the whole vibe of silly stoner speak will go away, because it's, you know, your parents could be doing it legally. You could go to the retail store and buy it. You know, I just wonder if the attitude or the view of marijuana will change, or is it still going to be sort of, because it won't be subversive anymore. It'll be okay.
I think the culture has already changed in that direction quite a bit. And I think it'll continue to do that.
We'll get more mature about it, if you will.
Yeah, maybe.
Because drunk talk isn't funny anymore, right? There used to be a guy named Foster Brooks who would appear on sitcoms in the 70s, and he was hilarious because he'd be drunk. You get it? It's funny. And it's not. Dick Van Dyke was a good, funny drunk. But we don't do that anymore.
I think it's similar in that it just depends. Like, also, there's, I don't know, it's hard to compare. Drunk people can be funny, but they can also be frightening.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, have you seen the drunk uncle comedy skit on Saturday Night Live?
I don't know if I have. Have
yeah,
I?
Yeah, it's a weekend update. Well, I think it's
been, oh, God, they do that. Yes, I have seen that.
Bobby Moynihan.
I was kind of surprised they brought that out, to be honest with you. So anyway.
I don't know about the comparison you're drawing there. To say that drunk people aren't funny anymore, that doesn't strike me as entirely true.
Name the sitcom, okay, Saturday Night Live doesn't count, or popular movie that portrays a drunk person as funny just because they're drunk.
I don't know. I don't think I have to answer that. What'd you say?
Animal House.
Animal House was not made recently. Kind of my point. Animal House works that way, but not in the last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years.
It's such a peculiar question that I don't have an answer ready. But I don't know.
You don't have to answer that, Griff. That was just a random observation from yours truly. It's 11:15. The Mincing Rascals is the best podcast in Chicago, said the Headliners Club. We'll see how we do on the next nomination. We've submitted our tapes. We'll see what the committee says for this year. But so here's the Mincing Rascals. It's a podcast we normally record on Thursdays. This week we recorded on Friday to get in a little of the Mueller report. But I'm going to play for you first part of what we were talking about, and that is that census drop this week, which said that more people are leaving Illinois, Chicago, and Cook County than anywhere else in the country. And so the Mincing Rascals were wondering why. You'll hear the voices of Patty Vasquez and, to start, our Steve Bertrand.
The city residents who complain about their property taxes
are paying $7,800 or $5,300. Mm-hmm. What are you paying up in?
I'm not going to tell you what I'm paying. But, okay. But I'm paying a lot less than my neighbors because my neighbors have all rebuilt. So they're paying $20,000, over $20,000 a year.
Wow. That's cuckoo bananas. A guy called in to our show yesterday. So we were on the stream. We were just, while the White Sox were on the radio, we still do our shows at WGNradio.com. But when we do that, if I say, hey, why, whatever, I have a disproportionate people who are listening to me out of state because that's the only way they can get it. Fine. So I said, why did you leave Illinois?
Mm-hmm.
Or why do you know somebody's leaving Illinois? Guy called in from Arkansas. He said, well, he said, I lived in Elgin. It was a fine little neighborhood. You know, it's not the Gold Coast, but Elgin's a fine place to raise a family. He was happy with the schools. He was paying about $7,500 or $8,000 a year in property taxes. His taxes in Arkansas, he uses his credit card. They're about $600.
A year?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Does he like Arkansas?
Enough.
Okay. So I don't understand that because then, what else is happening in Arkansas? I mean, are they must be funding schools in a different way or funding.
Right. Happens. So then your sales taxes are higher. Something's right. Got to make up. Some schools there aren't so good either.
You're right. And some of the lower tax states truly are lower. They are doing it with fewer tax dollars. But I just don't think it's that dramatic sometimes because the money's got to be coming from somewhere.
Well, a lady also texted us. A woman in Texas wrote, she said, so she left in Chicago for all these kinds of reasons, too. She says, so I'm in Texas. It is boring here. I mean...
Well, you get what you pay for sometimes, well, although I don't know if that's the way to
That's
put
what
it,
I think. I think these people that leave in a huff will say these things, mm-hmm. but it's not the reason they're leaving, right? Like they say, I'm tired of Madigan. Find the person who left the state of Illinois.
Because of Speaker Madigan.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And that's a foolish decision. I mean, hopefully they had smarter, or, you know, better reasons to go.
Right. I know, because they've got their version of that there. Maybe not as bad.
But I think you're right. They might find themselves out for one reason. But the fact is, if more people are leaving Illinois than any other state.
They're leaving it for some reason.
Yeah.
Maybe it is that. It's just the economics.
Right. It's seductive to go somewhere where, you, like you just said, there's no income tax in Florida, but they also have a bigger tourism tax base, I mean, and revenue.
I don't know. I get real defensive about this. I get real boostery. I'm like, come on, everybody.
If they want to go, you can't make them stay.
I know that.
Some of them will say it's for weather, too.
The weather they've got. I get that.
Right. So if the weather is one of the reasons, Steve Bertrand, yeah, Patty, that's a reason. You know, our news click at WGNradio.com lists a bunch of reasons. Like, if you've left or know somebody who's thinking about it, why do people leave Cook County in Chicago, which is just a destination? People travel the world to come to Chicago in Cook County in Illinois. So why are people leaving? And we ask you about that. Mike Madigan is one of the options. 3% of you said that. 2% of you said I'm left-handed. That was just for fun. But most of you said it's all of the above. It's the taxes, it's the weather, it's the economy, jobs, wages, it's the politicians in this state. Anyway, there's a web poll question for you at WGNradio.com. The gang talked about the Mueller report, what they said about that after this. Track two now of the Mincing Rascals podcast, which you can listen to in its entirety wherever you find your finer podcasts. This time the gang, Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez, and I are talking about the Mueller report. It's Bertrand's voice you will hear at first. It comes after I said something along the lines of, this is report is sort of what I thought it would be. And then Bertrand said,
here's the thing. And, you know, Donald Trump talks about the fake press, right? The enemies of the people. He's declared the press the enemies. They saved his hide. There's an interesting theory out there that because enterprising reporters, we knew most of this stuff. You know, it had been reported over the past 2 years.
Oh, yeah, right.
Had none of that been reported and it all dropped yesterday, he'd be fighting for his life.
The New York Times said, just imagine if this came with a clean slate, if you didn't know anything and you experienced the totality of this all at once.
Which is an impossibility.
Well, no, but it's not
because
impossibility.
Because of vigorous reporting.
Had it not been reported.
Well, right. And also the way he handled his staff and their reaction to it and their desire to want to leak it.
No, but this point, I think, is that since we were sort of getting drip, drip, drip of this,
right.
It's the Steve Bertrand thing all over again. It's like you're so used to it, you don't even notice how bad it is. And if you drop it all in a 500-page report, which they did, and you had just handed it to somebody and say, okay, this,
right.
And they didn't know anything about it, they'd go, oh, that's got to stop right now.
It was like watching the season review of Game of Thrones before the next season started. we already watched all this.
Yeah. Well, in part, I mean, the expectation, at least early on, was, oh, my God, look at this story. Can you believe this is happening? And you expect that the American public will be like, well, this is outrageous.
Well,
but as you've mentioned time and time again, he's made this craziness normal.
Listen, I wrote a paragraph, so let me read it.
Okay, sorry.
I'll stand down.
2 years later, we have the Mueller report. The first news, tell me if you agree with this, is that the report did not find that any American colluded with Russia. Not the president, not his campaign, not even Chicago's very own George Papadopoulos. Obviously, several Americans did commit crimes and told lies about their activities. But coordinate with Russia? No. The second news is that it wasn't for not trying. They just couldn't pull it off.
It's a gang that can't shoot straight.
The president could not get his staff to carry out his orders that would have greatly changed this story. A friend of ours tweeted to me right when the report came out, and he said, okay, whatever. But the president does not like to be seen as anything but all powerful. And this is clearly a report about how he would have shot himself in the foot, but he couldn't get his staff to follow through with his directives. The report details instances, too, where the president, Sarah Sanders, and others did not speak the truth. The report details several instances where media reports were true, but that the president labeled them false. So when he would say, I did not talk to her. I did not ask somebody to do X. In fact, Mueller wasn't in the room. But the conclusion of the Mueller report is that the president continued to lie about his activities.
So Sarah Sanders said on two occasions, right, 2 days in a row after the Comey firing, that she'd heard from countless FBI agents.
On May 3rd, Sean came out and said the president has full confidence in his FBI director. Why did he say that?
Look, I think, again, he's questioned Director Comey's reason for needing to stay at the FBI. He had countless conversations with members from within the FBI.
Who wanted Comey out? I think one time she said it was a slip of the tongue, and then another time she said it was something she said in the heat of the moment.
Yep.
That I had a slip of the tongue when I used the word countless, but it's not untrue, and certainly you just echoed exactly the sentiment and the point that I was making, is that a number of both current and former FBI agents agreed with the president.
She said that what she was doing was, those were not prepared remarks.
What?
These are not prepared lies. These are made up lies on the spot.
Pick the version of it you want, but I'll tell you what she says about what you just said about what she said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is that it is true. She had heard from, she didn't know everybody in the FBI, but a lot of the FBI people she heard from didn't like James Comey. Final answer.
She's the White House press secretary. She lives in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
The moment heats up when she wakes up.
And if your go-to is to lie immediately, that just undermines everything else anyway.
Well, but I mean, it just is a reminder, and Bill Barr was evidence of this too, where I think they confused their personal allegiance with their responsibility, right? So she was just throwing stuff out there to help Donald Trump and maybe herself, even though in the back of her mind, she knew that this was padding. This was not true. But this is what you do when your boss is getting attacked.
I mean, look, every White House press secretary's job is to, unlike the attorney general, is to work directly for the president and to convey his message or his thoughts. And so she is more, she should be considered more of an advocate for the president than the attorney general should be.
Monday morning quarterback Bill Barr's performance for
that too. His job is not to be the attorney for the president of the United States.
He was sounding like Rudy Giuliani, wasn't
he? Yeah, let that guy come out.
There was, in fact, no collusion. And as the special counsel's report acknowledges, there is substantial evidence to show that the president was frustrated and angered by his sincere belief that the investigation was undermining his presidency, propelled by his political opponents, and fueled by illegal leaks.
You know, we talked about this last week. It's very discouraging because he was supposed to be one of the adults, you know, and when he
that's used Steve Bertrand. You also hear Patty Vasquez there, who you hear pretty late here on WGN Radio, doing a terrific evening talk show. I don't know where you are, maybe getting ready for bed or heading off to work at 10 o'clock in the evening, but I'd tune in Patty Vasquez as well. So that's the Mincing Rascals. It goes on. It goes on. And I hope you tune in the Mincing Rascals podcast each week. Hi. Don, I'm talking to Andy Mazur off the air.
It's a good conversation, too.
Whoa.
It's
fascinating.
Lucky.
Yeah, I know. Oh, so lucky. Well, I just, Andy, normally at this time, and we're about to, by the way, because we very much enjoy our Vibe Score segment where Griffin introduces us to a song. We'll talk about that. We'll make fun of it. And as a result, we'll make fun of Griffin. And then we'll score it on a scale of 1 to 100. That's the Vibe Score. And then we'll kick around some other ideas that are going on in the news, talk about them, and score them as well. But just again, a quick reminder now. It's 11:39. We are 60 seconds away from what was going to be pregame coverage of White Sox baseball. You've heard that the game has been postponed, canceled today because of rain. They'll make it up
August 6th, day-night doubleheader at Comerica Park.
Okay. And you'll hear Andy then, as well as tomorrow. As well. Tomorrow's schedule is
11:35 pre, 12:10 first pitch.
Andy, while I got you here, just a couple of quick things.
Mm-hmm.
And Don, you, Joe, jump in here real quick. In fact, this could be one of our Vibe Score segments, and that is, what did you make of the Tim Anderson beanball story with Kansas City this week?
It's a very multi-layered situation because, on one hand, you have the old school baseball philosophy of, you know, you don't flip your bat. Okay, but here's the deal.
If you don't know what happened, Tim Anderson hit a big home run Wednesday night against Kansas City.
Right.
And then on his next at-bat, he got hit in the butt. And right. And both benches empty. And then the managers got in, which was a nice twist.
Yeah, it was a nice twist. You have to go through this new school situation here. Because Tim Anderson, for what he did not show up the Royals. He was firing up his team, throwing the bat toward the dugout. And, you know, he circled the bases, and that was that. And you kind of had a feeling that the next time up, something was going to happen. I don't know if, how many people noticed this, but as the beanball thing started, Tim and the catcher, Martín Maldonado, were actually trying to calm everything down. They were talking to each other.
Right, and the body language I saw was Tim Anderson sort of patted the chest protector.
Saying, it's all good, it's all good. Like, I'm just going to take my base.
And Anderson didn't take more than one step towards the mound.
Not one.
He didn't wave his bat. His bat was gone. He was just like, really? Okay.
Yeah, so, and then, you know, as he's going down to first, I think people visualize that as he's attacking our catcher, he's ready to go, the catcher's holding him back. There was nothing of the sort, but, you know, then the melee goes on, and, you know, I tell you what, I am shocked that the pitching coach for the Royals did not get thrown out. Cal Eldred, a former White Sox, by the way, was basically instigating the second wave of the whole thing, which is when Renteria got tossed. And he and Dale Swain were going at it, he and Ned Yost were going at it, and then there's a report that was talking about Tim Anderson using racially charged words.
He's been suspended for another game.
And so it's one of those situations where you have to think, okay, heat of the battle, things do happen. And from what everybody's telling me, that things like this happen on the baseball field that never get reported because it's their arena. You know, it's their workspace. And these kind of things, although not condoned or not acceptable, get said. And nobody ever makes a big deal out of it because it's just, you know, guys in the heat of the battle. And I'm sure apologies are issued later, you know, from cooler heads prevailing. So that kind of thing got, I think that's why Joe West did not respond to comment after the game when the AP pool reporter went to find out why Tim Anderson got ejected. And he chose not to comment. So I don't know if that was exactly what he heard and reported that to the league.
Of all of the, like you said, it's multi-layered, but of all things, it felt like the umpire was too heavy-handed in tossing Anderson from the game. None of us understood that.
It's Joe West. I mean, Joe West retired 5 years ago and no one told him. I mean, that's what's going on, because he has to be in the middle of everything. He's not happy unless he's the center of attention, and he's horrible for the game.
You do play-by-play and commentary for the White Sox here on WGN, along with Ed and DJ. Joe Brand does it for the Kane County.
Yes, he does.
Joe's got an informed opinion on this, too. Rather than talking about retaliation, which everybody is, I don't understand that. Everybody's made up their minds. Is it okay to retaliate with a fastball? I think that's insane. But what about the celebration? Are we okay with the bat flip? Say he did flip the bat nonchalantly and thumbed his nose at the pitcher. I think about what players do in the NFL.
That's the thing.
How choreographed their celebrations are in the face of the defenders who could not stop the touchdown pass. And those are some hot-headed, in the heat of the moment athletes. And they seem to be able to process that. So I'm of opinion that you can flip your bat all you want as long as you don't throw it at somebody. What do you say?
Well, I say this, and it's been pointed out a few times. If you don't want the guy to celebrate, get him out.
Joe, what do you say about all of that?
I do agree with that argument. The one thing I'm kind of aside with is, obviously the goal every day is to get the batter out. What I agree with is, okay, let the guy celebrate at the plate after hitting a home run, but then the next time when you do strike him out, do a cartwheel off the mound, because then there's really no side on each way, because just express yourself. Do what you want to do. One of the best things was in the World Series when Yasiel Puig hit a go-ahead grand slam or a big three-run homer, and he flips his bat, he has this huge celebration, and the Boston Red Sox pitcher just takes off his glove and slams it to the ground. I mean, it's just emotion upon emotion, and it has nothing to do with disrespecting the game. I don't think Tim Anderson did anything wrong whatsoever. He flipped his bat. He said two words, let's go. And he looked at his dugout. That's what he said. I don't see how that's showing up the pitcher. Now, here's the other thing, and I'm only saying this just to make it full disclosure, not to tout myself. I know Brad Keller. He is one of the most genuine people I've ever met.
Who's Brad Keller? He's the pitcher for the Royals.
The pitcher that hit Tim Anderson. If you watch what happened, he hits Anderson, like you said, right on the butt, and right away his catcher, Martín Maldonado, gets in the way of Anderson, and like Andy said, the two try to just defuse the situation. You don't see Keller flipping his hand or anything like that. Now, I say all that, but he's still the guy throwing the ball. So, well, yes, throwing at the...
Does that decision come from him or from the manager?
See, this is a young pitcher. He's still practically a rookie. I know he was the opening day starter, but I really think there was a heavy influence coming from the dugout to not show up, or rather to retaliate Anderson for what they thought he was showing him up.
That was Cal Eldred. That was all Cal Eldred. I don't know that for a fact, but just the way that Cal Eldred reacted to everything.
Yeah.
It was almost like a guilty thing.
And because at the end of the game, Brad Keller said, "Oh, I didn't mean to hit him." I mean, come on. If you mean to hit him, just go ahead and say it.
He did, but
I feel like that's him trying to cover his tracks with not thinking that Anderson did anything wrong, because I think he's a new school guy that doesn't want to be part of this old age baseball genre that you can't celebrate a home run because it's not the 1960s anymore.
Well, see, even back in the 1960s, now, Ron Santa would tell me these stories all the time because he batted behind Billy Williams. And he would pray that Billy Williams would not hit a home run, because if Billy Williams hit a home run, he was hitting the deck. The next pitch was coming at his chin, and he would tell me that he knew he was going to get dusted, because that was the way they did it back then. And I agree with Joe. This is a new era where you see the guys in the NFL celebrating. You see that the NFL loosened its restrictions.
Yeah, if the NFL can do that, baseball can allow
exactly.
It.
If anything, look at hockey. Look at the celebrations are now options on video games in NHL. Of you want to ride the stick or do you want to shoot a bow and arrow? Like it's part of sports.
Soccer does it too, and basketball would, except they got to run the other way.
Correct.
The play doesn't stop after an NBA score. We need to pause.
Okay, good.
Griff, let's take the commercial break here. Then we'll come back with our Vibe Score segment. Andy, you can play along if you like.
Okay,
it's really fun. We'll listen to a song and then make fun of Griffin. This is WGN. Don't even gotta try. I like shouting, make it better over time. They just say I'm not the baddest, you lie. 150, this is WGN, John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio. This is our Vibe Score segment. About this time on Saturdays, Griff throws something at us. Let's catch up on the music scene. What is this, Griff? You're not ready for me, bud?
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you on
my headphones. Radio. Went out. I'm not hearing you through my headphones.
All
it's
right.
Weird.
Well, we hear you
this
now.
This is going to be a big problem.
Can you hear us, Greg?
That's Lizzo with a song called Juice off of an album that came out over the week, just this past week, called Cause I Love You.
Cause I Love You, 1 to 100. Andy, do you love the song?
I think my 14-year-old niece could write that. So I'm going was it to 100, right?
100.
Yeah, I'm going to go like 30.
I was digging it. I could imagine a scene where I would listen to that. I'm out in the backyard. I'm barbecuing. Someone's playing ping pong, and I'm shaking my groove thing. I'm giving that an 89. Joe Brand, go.
You play ping pong outdoors at barbecues? I actually
his groove thing.
I give that
100. I know this artist. I don't know this artist. I've heard another song by this artist before called "Good as Hell," and I was on that song for about a week, and then I just heard it too many times. I feel like this is just a revisitation of that song.
I'm glad you brought that song up, Joe. It's mind-blowing to me that did not become a number one smash hit that everyone we're talking to and everyone in the world knows. It's insanely catchy.
What's that
Fine
song?
As Hell?
It's called Good as Hell.
Yeah.
Good as Hell.
And that was from an EP that she put out a couple years ago. So I think she's trending towards superstardom. And I think this album that she put out, I think... it has Song of Summer candidates on it, this one especially.
Did you notice the barbecue, the outdoor table tennis thing I threw out there? I said, this feels like a song. You're hitting the ping pong. You got a beer in your hand. Yep. Someone's cooking weenies on a grill.
She's incredibly... I love this song. She's very talented. And she also spent some time in Minneapolis while I was there. So,
what's her name again?
Lizzo.
So 1 to 100, Griff, where are you with Lizzo?
Well, this song... Lizzo herself, I'm like a 99. I really think you should get used to having that name in your life. And this song I love too. I'm like a 90.
Yeah. Where are you, Don Kleppen?
I'll give it a 79. I enjoyed it. It bordered on catchy. I will check out that Good as Hell.
It bordered on catchy. Yeah. I feel like the first time I heard this song, I had known it for like 3 years. Like That her songs tend to hit like that. It's just like, oh,
the one
I'm instantly familiar with this.
Yeah.
And then maybe, as Joe said, it gets a little repetitive for that reason.
That's what I was thinking. What Joe said. It's more like more along the lines of like, I could listen to it, but I could already kind of see it being burnt out.
I see the end coming fast.
Yeah, like a train. But I do want to check out the one song that you guys had mentioned by her, the Good as Hell or whatever.
I think you'll know it when you hear it.
Yeah, I might.
I want to throw a different song at you guys. The Coachella performance by Beyonce. What do we all think of that performance? I've watched a little of the documentary, but I've watched a lot of that performance. What did you guys think of that?
Ooh, I am innocent of that performance completely.
Yeah, you've blindsided me.
I did not.
Hooray.
I have to look into it. My phone notification of when Beyonce performs must not have worked.
It's probably the best like live music performance of the century so far.
Man.
So you guys kind of missed the boat there.
I totally missed it. I want to.
It really does rock. The choreography, there's so many players, so many colors. It's so much fun. The Coachella Beyonce performance with a marching band, for crying out loud, is a blast. If you want to have a fun half hour, just dial that up.
Best thing I saw with the marching band was the Prince halftime show in Miami at the Super Bowl for Purple Rain.
Anytime somebody
that was awesome.
I said this to Griff. I said, anytime anybody weaves a marching band into their popular music, I'm totally on board with that. Okay, 1 to 100. Another one for you guys. You ready? Peeps, Andy Mazur, go.
Peeps are 100.
I'm going to give them a 7 just because, God bless them, they're making an effort. It's Easter. But what a ridiculous, awful-looking, weird-feeling, bad-tasting candy. Joe Brand, go.
I'll give Peeps an 80. I'll give Peep Wars a 100.
Peep Wars?
So you put two Peeps on a paper plate, and you put toothpicks in the chest of each of the Peeps. You put the Peeps on the plate in the microwave.
Yeah.
And as they expand, the first toothpick to puncture the other Peep wins.
That's great. Okay.
It's a holiday tradition.
I was going to say,
unlike any other.
Microwave Peeps. We've never done the wars at my house. This is definitely happening, probably tomorrow.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Don, do you like that candy?
No, dislike strongly, but I do like watching them blow up in the microwave, yeah. So 5 on taste, 75 on entertainment.
Hey, Mom, is it okay if we blow up some Peeps in the microwave with toothpicks?
Totally.
Yeah, I'm sure that, because that sounds easy to clean up.
Oh, yeah. It's not a gooey mess.
It's Easter. That's an Easter tradition, man.
People are screaming over the holiday ham.
Baseball policing itself with bean balls. So we talked about this, yeah. Andy. 100 is, we should leave it as it is. If you celebrate, you get brushed back. What do you say?
I say 2.
I say 2. Joe Brand says?
I say 2.
Don, say 2.
I'll say 2.
There you go. Hey! Yeah. All right, boys. Andy, no baseball today.
No baseball today.
Thank you, Griffin, for helping us out. Griff had to check out. He's getting ready for the Wintrust Business Lunch with Amy Guth. Not originally on the schedule. It will be today because the White Sox are washed out. It's 11:56. We'll catch up with Amy and head into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Tell you the stories that matter coming up next. There. Thank you, Bob Ferguson. He's been the engineer this morning helping all of the shows out. Thank you also to Griffin Filipich, our producer, Joe Brand in the newsroom, and Don Kleppen in the newsroom. Joe Brand is on the road doing sports. So I'm checking out, and Amy Guth is checking in. You and I started a conversation off the air. Maybe we could have just a second of it on the air. You had an observation about the Notre Dame story this week?
Yeah, you know, anytime there's one of those just massive stories, it's always very interesting to see the second beat stories that come out of it later. And one of those that I've thought was really fascinating is that I didn't realize there were bees kept on top of the roof.
And on purpose.
Yeah, there's a beekeeper. That's his job.
Of Notre Dame.
Yes. And I thought that was so interesting. I had no idea. And so he was able to, using a drone, determined that the bee hives, there's several of them up there, they were all intact.
Really?
And appeared to be unharmed. He doesn't know, he can't get in there to see the bees yet, but he spoke to a reporter about that and used a drone and they checked it out. I thought, like, what an interesting thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
To be able to use technology in such an interesting way.
One of the interesting stories I thought was what's happening now, and that is Macron on down are all debating whether or not they should recreate Notre Dame as it existed brick by brick, inside and out, or should they evolve it into some other expression and change in some way Notre Dame. And they're all, it's too bad. They're already arguing about that.
That's right.
At a time when, you know, they are also trying to unite. How nice that the world in a week found $1 billion in its pocket.
Isn't that something?
To yeah. donate. And they want to get this thing done in 5 years for their Olympics.
That seems very ambitious.
It doesn't it, though? But what a great moment that would be if there was, you can get the goosebumps now for the unveiling of the new Notre Dame whenever that happens.
Yeah, truly.
So what are you guys cobbling together today?
Yeah. Surprise, we're on today. We thought we were going to be having some White Sox, but that's all right. I don't live far. So here we are. So we're going to talk about, well, what you do anytime you're suddenly going to be on the air is you say, well, what's going on today? What's happening? And today is 420. And so for people involved in cannabis culture, It is a big national holiday, and so we're going to look at some of the business aspects of that. That is, some local cannabis companies have gotten some very major dollars lately, so some huge funding. That's a really interesting business frontier. There's still some legal, you know, things being worked out, but it's really fascinating, and it's feeding the economy here in Chicago too. So we're looking at some of those companies and just kind of what that means. And then we're going to talk with Lisa Bertagnoli from Crane's Chicago Business about the CSO. Strike that's ongoing. It's the longest strike in the symphony's history, and it's kind of an unusual one. She wrote a really interesting piece at Crane's about why it's a different one, and there's some real like nuanced details about why it's taking a different form than other strikes in the previous times, and why it's gone on so long. And then she wrote another piece looking ahead of how that might impact Ravinia.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's a big night, or more than one night.
Several nights, yeah. And, you know, it has collateral damage to it because Tesori, which is the restaurant there at the Symphony Center, they've closed down temporarily, so there's a lot of workers out of work there. There's union musicians. You know, there's all this interesting stuff to really, that's kind of a bigger story than I think a lot of people realize. So we'll talk with her, too.
Here comes a good show with Amy Guth.
Thanks so much.